Deith da, eubi nachan. Welcome to podcast number 41. Well, the days are flying by. We've now gone past the longest day of the year, which is gutting, really. Reminds me of my Auntie Doreen. As soon as the longest day was gone, she'd be in the next evening. They lived just across the road from us there in Glen Road. And she'd say, evenings are pulling in. And sadly, she was right. But we still got a good few weeks of summer left, hopefully, yet. I think they're predicting handsome weather next month. But a bit different tonight to what I'd planned. I did promise you, I think, an interview. And I'm recording this on the Thursday afternoon. And we was all geared up to do it today. But me mate that was going to do it, he did call me about an hour before to say he wasn't feeling 100%. So could we put it off to next week? So sorry about that. Tis a pity, really, because I prefer listening to other people than listening to me. But we'll hopefully record him next week. And I've also got a lovely lady of Wadebridge as well that we're going to hopefully record her as well. So we'll bounce them into the next, you know, week's kind of thing. One next week, one the week after. We've had yet again another varied week, our usual trips to Glen Valley and Penmount, but also St Briok Church and Blisland Church too. So we did get around a little bit. But I was in work yesterday morning and I did have a message come through from Marion Sandercock, dear of her. It was class. She sent me a message. She was in a charity shop in Wadebridge in the street there next to me mate Stuart Robertson. And she sent me a photo of a print of a painting. And she said, I don't know if you'd be interested in this or no. Well, my heart, it was fantastic when I saw it, because it was a picture that, well, years ago, I searched everywhere to get a copy of this picture. And of course, then I found out it was just limited. There was just 500 prints. So I'd missed out. So I whipped over right away, went into the shop there, the hospice shop, had a lovely chat there with the ladies beyond the till and went and bought me picture. So I thought, coinciding with the dates and everything, I thought perhaps instead of doing me interview tonight, it would be good to talk about that. And that's the Cornish Rebellion. Actually, before I talk about the main event, I thought I'd just mention a bit more about the picture in case I forget. I said there's only 500 prints done, and I think mine's number 210 or something like that. But it's called Crossing the Tamar, and was painted by Donald MacLeod. Now, I think he was an artist down St Ives way, and it was actually painted in 1997, because that was 500 years since the actual rebellion. So that kind of ties in the 500 years to 500 prints. And, well, tis hanging in me porch here at home already. But anyway, let's get back to the main plot. Ah, one other thing as well, which I nearly forgot. When I was in the shop, they said that they listened to the podcast and they did tell me off for talking a bit too fast. So I'm going to have to try and slow down a bit. Anyway, here goes. I think the story really begins in late 1496, and it goes back to King Henry the VII, and he made all these extra hardships, really, on people down here in Cornwall, mainly with new regulations about the tin mining industry and everything. And, of course, it was included altering the exemption from certain taxes and everything like that. And then in early 1497, he was being threatened by the Scots invading England, and he then raised more taxes to help fight the Scots. And they did say the burden was more heavily felt in Cornwall. I'm not sure why that is, but of course it began to build an unrest down here. The protest really began down in St Kevern, and that was with a chap called Michael Joseph, who was a blacksmith, and he's otherwise known as Angoff, which will be my Cornish words for the week, so I'm cheating a bit there. Angoff, which is the smith, meaning the blacksmith. And actually, there's Angoves around in Cornwall now, and they reckon that comes from Angoff. So, as I said, Michael Joseph, he was chosen to lead the men. What they were planning to do was to march on London and present a petition saying how unfairly they felt they were being treated, all the privileges of the Cornish Parliament down here through the tin mine and everything had been taken away. And then he got to Bodmin, and it was there that he met up with a lawyer there, and he was called Thomas Flamanc. Now, the Flamancs, they come from Boscarn, Nanstallan area. A lot of you will know Boscarn Junction there if you go up and down the Camel Trail. And under Flamanc and Michael Joseph, there was about 6,000 of them, the Cornish there, that left Bodmin on their march. And by the time they reached Devon, well, they reckon the numbers then was up 15,000 strong. But I don't think they were the best armed. Somebody referred to them as the Pitchfork Army. I mean, that, you know, they weren't trained soldiers as such. I'm sure I did read somewhere once that there was quite a few there with longbows that were pretty good. But, they weren't really trained for battle. As they were then going up through England, I think all the time they were open that they would get more support the further they went up. But this didn't materialise at all. And then King Henry, he did actually hear that the Cornish were on the way up. So I think he then started diverting some of his main army that were actually going to head up to Scotland. And then he also, as they were getting closer to London, a lot of the locals up there then kind of got together to defend the city. So then the Cornish came up against they as well. By the time the Cornish got up to Blackheath, the king had really got a big army together. He was getting, you know, soldiers in from everywhere. And I know that when they camped there, Angoff, he was still adamant that he was prepared for battle. But there was a lot of the men that, well, they didn't really think they committed themselves for, like, treason. They was going up to protest sort of thing. So there was a lot of desertions, I think, that night before the battle. So on the 17th of June 1497 was the Battle of Deptford Bridge, or otherwise known as the Battle of Blackheath. And of course, I'm always reminded of this because whenever I go up for anything like the marathon or when we rode from London to Paris, we always go to Blackheath. But, I mean, by then, the king himself, he mustered an army, well, of over 25,000 men. And, of course, after the late desertions and everything, the Cornish were down to less than 10,000. And also, they didn't have cavalry or anything like that. So you could see that 'twas really up against them. I think initially the Cornish did put up a brave fight, really. The king's men, they went over Deptford Bridge, and I think it was Deptford Creek was where they kind of met up with the Cornish. And the Cornish did have some guns and archers there, and there was quite a battle. But the king's men, they did drive the Cornish back. And t'was a hopeless fight, really. I mean, they were overwhelmed. They was outnumbered, surrounded. They weren't very well trained, and they didn't have the equipment. And t'was a hopeless fight, really. So Michael Joseph and Thomas Flamanc, they were actually arrested and they were taken to London and they were tried. They were both found guilty and they were both sentenced to be hung, drawn and quartered. But then apparently the king, he did show him a bit of mercy and he decided that they would die by the quicker death of hanging. But then once they had passed away, they would then be decapitated and quartered. And I think then both their heads were actually taken and they were put on London Bridge. The quarters from Flamanc were put on the gates of the city of London. And the plan for the body parts of Angoff was to be sent back to different parts of Cornwall to be put up to deter the Cornish from any other uprisings. But there was reports afterwards that they actually decided not to do that as they thought it might antagonise the Cornish further if they did. But I know I've heard stories of this happening in the past and actually body parts being put on stakes on the bridge at Wade Bridge, like, you know, to deter them as such. And as I said earlier, I'm recording this on Thursday today. This is the 29th of June, and the execution actually took place 2 days ago, 27th of June, 1497. After this, the Cornish, they did suffer quite a few other penalties and punishments right up until 1508, where they had people had estates seized, and that was given to more loyal subjects. And it wasn't until 1508 that the king actually did grant a pardon, and the powers of the Cornish Stannary Parliament were reinstated. But it did pauperise a lot of Cornwall, even worse than they were before. Records do say that Anne Gough was brave and defiant till the end, and he thought he'd done the right thing. And as he was being dragged to be killed, he did say to people that he would have a name perpetual and a fame permanent and immortal. And in a way he was right, because there's still memorials for both him and Thomas Flamanc today. Up at Blackheath, I've never seen it. I've been there enough blimmin' times, but there is a slate memorial there, both to the both men, and that was actually engraved on Delibol slate from down here in Cornwall. So there's that. And then there's also a memorial to them in at Bodmin as well. And also, obviously, the best one of all is a statue of both men, and that's down in St. Kevern itself. I remember we actually did conduct a funeral down there 2 or 3 years ago now, and I did make sure I did take a photo of their statue while I was down there. And then I expect a lot of you would remember back in 1997, there was a commemorative march. It was named Giscirth Curnow, which is Cornwall Marches On, and they actually marched the original route of the Cornish from St. Kevern all the way up to Blackheath in London, and that was to celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Cornish Rebellion. And of course, the least famous of them all, I expect most of you know, I have got one or two little tattoos here and there, and that was actually my first tattoo, which I had on my wrist, Anne Gough. And that was sorted for me by me dear mates, Rich and Lowell. And ironically, really, because Rich's mother, she lived in the smithy there at Slade's Bridge. So it kind of all tied in a bit, really. So I think that's about it, really. I say it all kind of tied in, me getting the picture yesterday and tied in with the fact that the executions happened this week and everything. It was a bit weird how it all fell into place, but I hope you found it a bit interesting. I thought for me Cornish dialect this week, I know we was talking about tin miners and the Stannary Parliaments and a bit earlier. And of course, the Cornish word for mine is bow, B-A-L. But also there is Cornish dialect. I always remember Father saying this, if you was noisy or anything, instead of saying shut up, he'd say, "Ush your bow," which I thought was classic, really. So, he'd say, "Ush your bow." So there we are. So that's me Cornish dialect for the week anyway. Right, well, there we go. I think that's about it. Say I'm away tomorrow, so it's a late night tonight getting this one done. And then hopefully next week, I'm determined we'll get an interview. So you won't have to listen to me boring voice going on and on. But have a good week. I wish you well. Duganus, Curnow Bisfican.